Chapter 1. The High Priest. April 619 BC, the 20th year of King Josiah. My father sort of faded away. I am reconciled to his death, but I can never really be satisfied with all the missed opportunities. From an early age one looks up to one's parents, and a son should honour and admire his father. My father was admired by all, and was a master at keeping the peace, particularly with idolaters and pagans. His voice could woo enemies and friends alike. To hear him read the scriptures, when I was young, before his eyesight began to fail, was pure pleasure. 2 years before, in the 18th year of Josiah, when I returned to Judah after the discovery of the book of the law in the temple, I had noticed a little shakiness, a little caution in his step, a few signs of old age. His fall that night on the road to Anathoth had been the start of a gradual decline. He had never been able to walk easily after that, and had lived in the high priest's house in Jerusalem from then until his death. His eyesight had continued to worsen so that he could no longer read or even see very well, and his voice had begun to fail too. Increasingly, he had seemed to be sick with a cold, and he had begun to feel pain in his legs all the time. His pain was worse during the cold weather, and my mother had been rightly worried about him during his last winter. He had spent most of the time in bed. Shortly after the Passover, he had again got a cold. Then one day, about a week later, as he was talking to my mother, he had suddenly stopped, clutched at his chest, and then never spoke again. Before nightfall, he was dead, and the sad tidings had been carried to the king and to my brother Azariah. I heard the shocking news the next morning from the servant Azariah sent to convey the information. With my mother and father living in Jerusalem, I had been living alone in our house in Anathoth for most of the time when I was in Judah. Azariah and I walked to Jerusalem together that morning, and I think we were both in shock. For me, it had come as a big surprise, and I felt a great sense of loss, despite the fact that my father and I had had many arguments over the 7 years that had passed since that memorable night of my 17th birthday. For Azariah, though, there would not be only a sense of loss, but also a suddenly increased responsibility. The spiritual weight of a nation had fallen on his shoulders, and he must bear it without any advice from his father. We walked in silence for much of the way, and I wondered what the future would bring between us. The future had suddenly come much closer, and now my work as a prophet must involve interacting with a new high priest, to deliver a message of coming destruction, which was now 7 years closer than it had been when I had first experienced the voice of Yahweh. Azariah and I had never got on well. He viewed me as an upstart idealist with a blinkered view of life, while I considered him to be sadly detached from the God he worshipped, more interested in the mode and means of worship than in the God who inspired our worship. The confrontations of the past could now easily become more common and more bitter. The day was a typical spring morning in Anathoth, sunny and warming quickly. Flocks of travelling birds still flew uncaring overhead, and Anathoth, perched on its unremarkable hill, remained as testament to the fact that life goes on, though the protagonists change. Roads recently mended after a cold, wet winter still carried people into and out of this unimportant village, inhabited mostly by priests and Levites. Yet one of its more important sons had left its streets never to return. Israel's leader of worship had finished his course. His work had been left to another, one of the next generation, a generation which would make its peace with God or not, as it chose. My father's work was done, but his legacy would live on in the book of the law of God that he had uncovered in the temple. The copies made under his supervision could guide the worship of the nation through generations to come. But we who outlived him would choose how important it was. Azariah was to be the new hand guiding the worship of the people of God. It seemed like a big change, one of the biggest changes of my life, yet around me the world continued unaffected. A little more than 2 years had elapsed between the great Passover of King Josiah and the death of my father, and I had spent much of that time in other nations. I had seen the Nile River and delivered a message to Pharaoh, which had taken my very best efforts and the blessings of God to achieve. I had even crossed the Euphrates River and visited some smaller kingdoms in the north. 3 times in each year I had returned to Jerusalem to keep the feasts which God had commanded all Israelite men to attend in Jerusalem. Throughout that time, King Josiah had kept his direction and maintained his enthusiasm for the God of his fathers, but the work of leading a nation had taken its toll on him. Urgent reformation is admirable and inspiring, but the ongoing task of reshaping attitude and driving constant religious renewal is far more trying. Josiah's faith still shone in everything he did, but his proselytizing zeal had been overshadowed by the urgent but mundane matters of ruling a kingdom. Never again would he ride at the head of a column of men burning with the desire to purge Judah of her thanklessness and unfaithfulness. Already the paroxysm of purity was exhausted, and any remaining energy was directed towards trying to hold on to the advantage gained. For the moment, the enemies of the worship of Yahweh had quietly withdrawn, hiding themselves under an appearance of godliness, concealing their true colours, continuing to attend feasts and display a habit of acceptable expression. But God was never the object of their love within either their homes or their minds. Already the best had passed. Looking back past the horror of the sickening downward spiral presided over by Josiah's sons, it is easy to delineate the bright summer of Josiah's reign, a season of inspirational leadership. But it is also easy to see where midsummer passed and the relentless descent into winter began. Josiah had made a mighty effort, and he never gave up. His lifelong struggle against Manasseh's legacy was monumental, but it was a failure. He might just as well have tried to stop the incoming tide. Too many people find evil delightful and constraint unacceptable. Let me also provide what balance I can. Though Josiah's tireless work failed to save the nation, it did help individuals. Shobai, Miriam, Makkah, and their friends from Bethel were all helped enormously by Josiah's visits to Israel and by the first Passover he commanded. They had already been determined in their faith, but Josiah had added the support of authority, which makes goodness easier. Josiah made it easier for his subjects to choose God, and some took the opportunity. Zakkai and Abigail, with whom Shobai and the others had stayed during that first Passover, were led to a closer worship of Yahweh by Josiah. In the lives of these individuals and others like them, Josiah won. A king must rule for his entire nation, but sometimes the real benefits of his work go only to a select few. Josiah's true success was seen in the lives of those who chose to follow Yahweh and passed on their love of God to their children. Some of those children would later go into captivity and died in a foreign land, longing for the land of their fathers, but they would die in faith. This diary is taking much longer to write than I ever expected it to. I began it in frustration on the evening after Johanan accused me of not speaking the words of God and not being sent by Yahweh. Thinking back over the years stirs up all sorts of memories, both good and bad. The ones that fill me with joy are the memories of the responses of individuals who saw God's offer of life and reached out for it. These were the wonderful long-term results of Josiah's work, and I hope to write more about some of them later, if I live long enough. This is the end of the free sample of Terror on Every Side, The Life of Jeremiah, Volume 3, Darkness Falling. For more information or to order a copy of the book, please visit www.bibletales.online.